Welcome to the Nintendo Fusion Podcast, a podcast that fuses past, present, and future Nintendo thought. I'm David, accompanied by my friend, Jordan. Now, Jordan, did you hear that EA is taking over Nintendo?
Oh, that's not good.
Yeah, it's not good at all, because you know what's going to happen is their new game is going to be called Pay Per Mario.
Oh, no. Hey, at least we're getting a new Paper Mario game then.
Yeah, except you're going to have to pay for every Mario. Anyway, just, you know, Paper Mario is going to come up later in the episode and you'll see why in just a moment. But we first wanted to let you know that, yes, you're not listening to the Minish Cap episode. We know we promised that last week. It's coming. We swear. We both just have to finish the game so that we can give it a fair and honest review. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm in the final stretch, but I wasn't quite ready for a full review today.
Yeah, same here. So we will definitely do that next week, barring either of us not actually finishing the game by next week. But anyway, Jordan, why don't you introduce this week's topic?
So for today's episode, we're going to just talk about some underrated games that we feel deserve a bit more recognition from the Nintendo fan base. These are going to be games that have been exclusive on Nintendo platforms. And then also, like, they could be games that people have, like, played before or are well known and all that, but typically just don't have good, like, reputation online, or at least not the reputation that we think that they probably deserve.
Right. And just so you're aware, most of them are Nintendo made and published, but there is a couple of surprises here. We weren't trying to just limit ourselves to games that just Nintendo's made, but like Jordan said, we were limited to Nintendo exclusives, because there are plenty of games, especially in like the indie community, that are on all platforms that we think everybody should enjoy and play that, you know, maybe doesn't have as big a following or is somewhat underrated. But for these, we're just going to talk about typically Nintendo games.
This is just a collect. There's no like connection between these games, and it's not like a set limit. Like these are the top five or anything.
Yeah,
it's just, here are six from the giant bag.
Right. We've played quite a few games on Nintendo consoles over the years, and, you know, all of these would be really great to revisit and enjoy a little bit. The first one that we have on our list is actually related to Minish Cap in some ways. It's Zelda 2, The Adventure of Link, the old NES game that was the sequel to the very first Legend of Zelda game. Now, this one's a little bit of a black sheep in the community, or I guess in the series itself. You know, it doesn't follow the super traditional Zelda formula, but then again, it was the second game. So was there really a formula established to begin with? You know, you could argue not necessarily. Zelda 2 featured a larger overworld map, but that had sub areas, or you would enter into towns and dungeons and only be able to experience them in like a 2D side scroller mode rather than the overhead 2D Zelda that we're used to from the original Legend of Zelda and the other 2D games in the series.
Yeah, it's a bit surprising to think about that Nintendo just completely changed course with its sequel here. They definitely didn't do that with, well, they didn't originally intend to do that with Mario. So what we believe, or what we view as Mario 2 here in the States, it was actually Doki Doki Panic, right?
Yes.
In Japan.
And honestly, that just reminds me of all of those memes that were like, originally Mario Bros. 2 was Doki Doki Panic. Like a lot of YouTubers say that or something. it was a completely different game, and it was reskinned to be Mario characters. And then it was released in Japan as like Super Mario Brothers USA or something like that afterwards.
Yeah, but so like the original sequel to Mario Bros. Is really similar to Mario Bros. 1. And that's kind of how I would have imagined a Zelda 2 to be, right?
Yeah, the actual sequel is the what became known as the Lost Worlds here. So it's like the exact same graphics, just with much harder and eviler level design, in my opinion. anyway, Zelda 2 definitely strayed from that. Very different visually and honestly mechanically as well. It focused a lot more on combat, giving us an interesting magic bar system with various moves that Link could pull off. Like the finishing move from Twilight Princess, where Link like jumps and stabs enemies with his sword. That's basically straight from Zelda 2. That's one of the moves Link actually learns. So there are definitely like echoes and pieces and inspirations from Zelda 2 that have made it across the entire franchise.
Yeah, it's also the game that Dark Link comes from.
Yes, yeah, that's right. He was actually the final boss. Not just some random shadow from the Water Temple.
It also kind of established the reincarnation of Ganon.
Right, because it was all about his followers trying to bring him back. And every time you got a game over, it's like, sorry, Link, you're dead. And his followers managed to revive Ganon. It's the end of the world.
Man, maybe they should do, because like Zelda 2 was really difficult, right?
Yeah, it was hard.
They should do a Souls-like remake of it.
Oh, man, that'd be sick.
Zelda, it's a lot darker than the rest of the Zelda series as well.
Yeah, it sure is. And honestly, I think it's one of the harder of the Zelda games to complete without a guide. Like,
yeah,
good
well,
luck.
I mean, it's just one of the harder Zeldas in general. That game was really hard. I remember as a kid just getting absolutely murdered by the game over and over and over again.
Yeah, it even had lives. It wasn't like the first Zelda game where you'd die and you'd go back to the beginning of the dungeon or whatever. Like, you had a life system. It was crazy.
Yeah, I really appreciate Nintendo's willingness to be more creative with that game instead of just running back another sequel of Zelda. And eventually we did get the traditional top-down Zelda sequel that people wanted with Link's Awakening. But just because they allowed themselves to like open themselves up to be more creative and stuff, a lot of stuff came out of this game. Like, it really pushed forward the franchise.
Yeah.
Like you said, the magic being a big one. It was a big inspiration for Ocarina of Time, which is regarded as one of the best Zeldas ever made.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I mean, I believe, and I might be wrong on this, the director for Zelda 2 was like the combat lead for Ocarina of Time. And that's why the combat is the way it is. He took a lot of inspiration from that.
Yeah. Like they said in interviews that they intended to have more of like Zelda 2's DNA in Ocarina of Time than what we ended up with. Ocarina of Time was like originally designed to be a wildly different game than it ended up being. Like, for example, the entire game was supposed to take place in Ganon's castle, Mario 64 yeah. style.
Well, it's because Miyamoto really didn't know if the game was going to like fit, like if they could actually render a gigantic Hyrule field in 3D on the console. And so
yeah, they had to get a new cartridge size for that game.
Yeah. But I think it worked out really well. And a lot of like the overworld feel from Zelda 2 also went into like, you know, A Link to the Past and Ocarina of Time as well. In fact, there's another super direct correlation between Zelda 2 and Ocarina of Time, where all of the town names from Zelda 2 are the names of the sages in Ocarina of Time, which is really quite cool. So if you compare the timelines up, you're like, oh, those towns were actually named after the sages, even though the sages were created later. Even though the game is incredibly hard and is definitely an NES game, I still think it's worthy of Zelda fans giving it a shot. I know that a lot of folks that started with Breath of the Wild have tried to get into other games in the series and are like, it's totally different. And, you know, Jordan, you and I are like, but this is how Zelda's always been. With the dungeon-based approach and a lot more puzzles compared to what Breath of the Wild gave us with the open-world stuff. And I honestly think that going back to Zelda 2 will give you just another outlook on the series. Maybe that's a little bit more akin to what you're looking for from a Zelda game.
I think it's a game that definitely should be tried.
Yeah.
And when you die, don't just give up on it. Actually, like, give it a real shot. Maybe even look up some guides, because the game is brutal. I will say that it definitely came from the Nintendo hard era.
Yeah. Well, most of the NES games were hard in general, mostly because they were trying to figure out how to go from arcade based systems to home systems. And the real way to pad out your game was just make it so hard. People had to try it over and over again. And that's how you got your play hours up.
It's the Dark Souls of Zelda.
Literally. I don't know. I always thought that it was really fun. I think that its overworld theme is one of my actual favorite overworld themes in the series. I just really enjoy the game in general. It doesn't have like a whole lot to it. Its town theme is also really fun to listen to. And of course, it gave us a lot of really fun old-timey memes like I am Error. That originated from Zelda 2. And it's actually the guy's name. It's not like it's an error message or something. You also get to like fall down someone's chimney or something like that and scare them. I mean, it's a classic. It's a classic.
Yeah. Is it on the Nintendo Switch online?
It should be. I'm pretty sure it is. I think I remember pulling it up.
So it doesn't, well, I was going to say it doesn't cost anything, but it does cost a Nintendo Switch subscription service to try out.
Yeah. Zelda 2 Adventure of Link is indeed on it. I can see that on the list here.
It was also one of the first games to have a save feature, although I believe Zelda 1 had that as well.
Yeah, Zelda 1 actually had the battery on cartridge to save your progress. Yeah. No need for passwords.
Which, that was a pretty nice thing at the time. Now we take it for granted, like, it's just save.
Yeah, we absolutely do. Anyway, highly recommend giving Zelda 2 a shot.
Yeah, it seems to be the game that, like, people hate on the most in the franchise. At least the canonical Zelda games.
Yeah, we're not going into like Tingle's Rupee or Rosie Rupee Land or whatever. Or the CDI games.
Yeah, those. Which, as someone who has played through Wand of Gamelon, Zelda 2 is a lot better.
Well, and Wand of Gamelon definitely took inspiration from Zelda 2.
It did. Yeah, I was going to say that, but this is supposed to be an episode where we're trying to be positive with these games.
Right. But hey, that's just more of Zelda 2's influences just wiping off on other games, right?
If it weren't for Link's Awakening, I feel like Zelda 2 would have... It was on the path to like really shape the future of the Zelda franchise.
Yeah.
Because like Nintendo internally seemed to really like the approach of it. And then like the CDIs, that's what the CDI games took.
Right.
Inspiration from. Ocarina of Time was taking inspiration from it. But of course we had Link's Awakening and Link to the Past cementing 2D Zelda games to be top down, which is great. I love top down Zeldas, but it's nice to have that like one game that is kind of unique in its own way.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. So I would say if you have NSO, go ahead and just give the game a shot. Like we've been saying, you also have save states. So the game is just way more approachable in general.
Yeah. Cause like you said, you do have lives.
And it's pretty brutal when you do die because the map is gigantic. And to get to some locations, you have to like go through actual sub areas. Plus, you don't want to lose out on a whole bunch of experience and stuff because you actually have levels in the game, too. Man, that game is so weird. I love it. Well, should we move on to our next game, Jordan? I guess this one is more of like a series in my mind. If I had to pick a particular game, I'll tell you what it is in a second. But these are the Rhythm Heaven games. I don't think enough people understand how good these games are. I know that they're super weird. And if you aren't really into music, it's kind of hard to get into a rhythm game like this. But Rhythm Heaven makes it really approachable. And if I had to pick a particular game in the series that is somewhat underrated, if only because like not a lot of people have played it, it's Rhythm Heaven Fever on the Wii. That game is one of my all-time favorite games. You've played it, right?
Maybe. I imagine I have. I imagine I played it at one of our mutual friend's house in high school. Yeah. I will admit, I'm not a Rhythm Heaven guy, mostly because I am not a rhythm game guy. I don't have a musical background or anything. I'm not good at rhythm.
Yeah. And that's okay. You know, not everyone has to like the games, but if you have any sort of affinity for music, I would highly recommend checking out the Rhythm Heaven series. You have like, what, 2 weeks left to get the 3DS one if you really want to.
Oh, no.
Since the 3DS eShop is closing down. I mean, I guess you could buy it used physical. But I just absolutely love Rhythm Heaven. Ended up playing it for the first time as a freshman in college back in 2011 on the Wii and just fell in love with it. The main premise of the game is it's just a whole bunch of songs where you just press either A or A and B together. given various audio cues or visual cues. And you just have to get them right. And they are hilarious. They're really fun mini games. I would say that it's more akin to like WarioWare, for those of you that are more familiar with it. Though WarioWare is like bite-sized little mini games. This is like full songs, but kind of in that same animation style and just totally wacky and zany.
I think they're both created by the same teams, right?
They probably are. I haven't actually looked at that to know for sure, but that sounds right to me.
Yeah, they feel very similar. They definitely feel like they came from the same cloth.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is like one reason why I enjoy playing Rhythm Heaven. It's just not my personal cup of tea.
You're not the kind of person that goes for perfect clears on every single song. I get it. But what's really fun about Rhythm Heaven for me is that when they create these games, they actually write the music first, and then they all sit around in like a conference room, from what I've understood from interviews, and they're just like, okay, so in this song, I imagine a monkey and a chimpanzee are throwing golf balls to a human player who then has to hit them across a gigantic ocean to an island. Or, you know what this song reminds me of? It reminds me of a samurai that's destroying demons coming from a shadow realm, or just like totally random things. And it's so good and so fun. I would highly recommend checking out some gameplay videos of it on YouTube. And there are some really fun creators out there that have taken the songs and have created their own visuals to them in the same style, or have even written their own songs with their own mini games similar to the style of the games. I think one of the most popular videos regarding Rhythm Heaven is actually a remake of the Remix 10 from Rhythm Heaven Fever, but with all of the Smash Brothers characters from Smash Brothers Ultimate. That is such a good animated video on YouTube. Definitely check that out. It's very fun. What's funny about that video is like at the very end, it ends with Sakurai like throwing away potential DLC characters, or like putting DLC characters in the game. And there were like several of them that were thrown away that ended up making it into the final game. Like Sora and Steve, I know for sure were on that list of him throwing them away. Anyway, I don't need to gush about Rhythm Heaven too much longer. I absolutely love the series and love talking about it. I really, really, really want them to put one of the games on Switch. The Switch would be so good for it. I mean, they put WarioWare on Switch, so where's Rhythm Heaven? Come on.
Yeah. I'd be happy if Rhythm Heaven came to Switch, especially since, like, as you said, the WarioWare team is back in development.
Yeah.
Well, I guess they've always been around. They've just been doing other projects.
But hey, they gave us a WarioWare on Switch. For now, Rhythm Heaven is locked to the Wii and 3DS.
Yeah, and soon to be super locked.
Yeah, unless you buy used. Hooray. Anyway. All right, well, we can move on to the next one, Jordan. What do we got?
All right, so this one's very near and dear to my heart. It's a Star Fox game, which is one of my favorite franchises from Nintendo. Everyone loves Star Fox 64. That one's not an underrated game at all. Everyone knows that one's a really, really good game. But yeah. The rest of the franchise for Star Fox is pretty contentious, even within the Star Fox like fandom. Just because like a lot of the games tried like a lot of new things or so, except for Star Fox Zero. And then that one got lambasted for not doing enough new. But my personal favorite, aside from Star Fox 64 obviously is the best one, is Star Fox Assault. This one, a lot of people complain that there's not enough like on-rail shooter missions, but the ones that does have are pretty good. But I actually did really enjoy like the third-person shooter elements of the game, and also like the additional vehicle missions, like the tank stuff and everything. And the story is bad, but it's like a good kind of bad, right? It's really cheesy and just fun. I do kind of wish that there was more consequence to things. Like, they actually do kind of kill off characters and stuff, which is not something you expect from Nintendo by the very end. They're like, oh, and by the way, they're still alive for some reason. But I guess Nintendo didn't give quite as much creative freedom as Namco could have had, or should have had.
See, I haven't really played this one. I'm sorry. It's funny. the other Star Fox I played is the dinosaur one, but I only played that for a little while.
Adventures. Yeah, that one's also very contentious as well.
Yeah.
I just personally prefer Assault more. I played a lot of multiplayer Assault back in the day on the GameCube.
Yeah, yeah.
With friends.
I mean, it looks super good. I've seen a lot of gameplay for it, and I honestly do think that it's one of the better Star Fox games out there. But like you said, it's so hard to top Star Fox 64, or even, I guess, the SNES games.
yeah, which all three of those games are on Switch. I personally would love a remake of Assault, or even just a remaster. I will be one of the five people that will stand in line and pick up the game if they ever do it.
I mean, if they price it right, it might be a Metroid Prime situation, right?
No, people, it will not be a Prime situation.
Prime was technically like a, what, 9.5 out of 10 before?
Prime is one of the best rated games of all time and like has a very loud following of people who just absolutely adore the game.
Yeah.
Star Fox has neither of those.
Well, maybe if they put it out for $30 and people will give it a shot.
Sure. Yeah. I don't think it would ever sell quite as well as Prime, but
no, it definitely won't. But it'd be fun. And I'd really love to give it a shot one day.
Yeah. I really do think it's one of the gems of one of the hidden gems. Well, maybe not so hidden. One of the not so talked about gems on the GameCube.
Yeah, that sounds about right. And there are a lot of those because the GameCube just wasn't that popular.
Which is crazy because the GameCube had a lot of really good games.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Hopefully we get more Star Fox in the future, but given what happened with Zero, who knows? Zero might have been a series we'll get killer. More.
I don't think the series is dead.
Honestly, I think what will happen is we'll get like a Metroid situation where, you know, Metroid Other M basically killed the series for a long time. And it took like another group of developers to make a new game for Nintendo to be like, you know what, we'll give this another shot. And I really hope that maybe Next Level Games or someone else that is first party Nintendo just decides to do something with it and they come up with a cool idea and make it work.
Yeah. And there are people that are passionate internally with Star Fox.
Well, and that's definitely true because they managed to put out Star Fox 2 that never released.
Yeah. Yeah. And one of the people passionate for the series is Miyamoto himself, and he has a lot of say in Nintendo. One of the issues with Star Fox is they either give it off to a third party studio to do something with it, or they use it more as a tech demo piece series.
Right.
So kind of the F-Zero situation. It's just that there's more design space to Star Fox than there is to F-Zero. So it gets more of an opportunity.
Yeah.
Plus, Star Fox 64 sold a lot of units. So
true. And it also sold a lot of 3DSs.
Yeah. So like there is sales potential. It just hasn't met that potential in like over 20 years.
Oh, man. Now I want them to just push Star Fox 64 3D on Switch, but with like better high resolution updated graphics. Because that was such a good remaster of the game, even for a handheld console.
I remember my friend bought the remaster for the 3DS, and I was like, "Ooh, I want to try it." And so, like, while I was just hanging out at his house, I played through the game 10 times and cleared, like, got on the leaderboard for all 10 slots, and just made it way too high for him to ever like get on his own leaderboard. And he,
oh, that's awesome! He was so awesome. Angry. Maybe one day we should do a full Star Fox episode of the podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. I love Star Fox.
I think there's a lot of potential in the series.
Yeah. In our first episode, I said it was like one of my top three Nintendo franchises, but I would really love a new Star Fox. Also, like when they announced that like Star Fox just randomly appeared in that Ubisoft game, like there was a lot of like buzz and like excitement from people that I don't think Ubisoft or Nintendo even expected.
Yeah.
So I don't think Star Fox is dead. I think Zero was just a lackluster game on a lackluster console. And I'm pretty sure Nintendo knows that.
Yeah, I think you're right. I believe we will see Star Fox in the future.
Yeah, won't be soon. But we'll see within the next 10 years.
Yeah, in the next 10 years. Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, Jordan, what's our next underrated game?
All right. This one's another one dear to my heart. It's Red Steel 2, which this is the third party game. It is an exclusive, to my knowledge, on Nintendo. I don't know how you could port this to anything else. So a bit of context, Red Steel was a launch title for the Wii, and it was supposed to like kind of show off what you can do with the Wii remote. It was a swordplay shooter kind of game or whatever. There was a lot of hype for the game going into the release of the Wii. The Wii used it for a lot of its promotional material, and then people bought it and did not like it. I believe it sold pretty well. And so I think Ubisoft got mixed messaging that there was demand for a sequel. So they decided to do a sequel, Red Steel 2. And then they decided to do something completely new. It's it has the same kind of like gameplay like style to it or whatever, where it's a sword play gun game. But they put it in a new setting. It's kind of like a Western steampunk sort of thing with ninjas for some reason. But they did it to kind of demonstrate the Wii Motion Plus, and it came packaged in with a Wii Motion Plus as well, so it had more accurate swordplay. The problem is, since no one liked Red Steel 1, no one wanted to give this one a chance. So this game did not sell at all. You could literally buy Red Steel 2 with the Wii Motion Plus packaged in for less than a Wii Motion Plus on its own, I remember.
That's hilarious.
It bombed hard, but which is a shame, because I actually think this game was actually good. I actually think out of all the games on the Wii, I think this has the best motion controls.
Cool. And I mean, I think Skyward Sword is up there with motion controls too, right?
So this game came out before Skyward Sword. This game made Skyward Sword a disappointment to me.
That's hilarious.
Because the sword play was so bad in Skyward Sword compared to this game.
That's funny. But hey, maybe they can port it to Switch, because the Joy-Cons have all of the capabilities as demonstrated by Skyward Sword.
They won't do that. I would be one of the... So I said there would be five people that buy Star Fox Assault. I'd be one of the three people. Maybe one. I might be the only person who'd buy this game.
That's hilarious.
They remastered it.
I mean, you say such high praises of it, and I have never played it. I didn't even play Red Steel 1.
Need to play Red Steel 1. I honestly think this game would have done better if they just gave it a completely new name.
Guns and katanas or something. I don't know.
Something. I don't know. Wild West Ninjas. That would have sold better.
Oh, that's funny.
Wild West Cyber Ninjas. Just go crazy with it.
Could have worked. But
I love the art style. I love the graphics. It's one of the best looking games on the Wii. It's one of the best looking games, one of the best functioning games. It's just a blast for just good, like, beat 'em up action. And no one talks about it, which is entirely because of the first game's fault.
I've only ever heard you say good things about it. I haven't heard anyone even talk about it. So
it's because I'm the only person who bought it.
Oh, that's funny. Well, maybe the series will come back. I don't know.
No.
In the meantime, you can go get it.
So the funny thing is, I actually know there is at least one other person in this world who likes it. The current CEO of Ubisoft, who's kind of a bad person, but he has a copy of Red Steel 2 on his desk in the background whenever he's on video or anything. Which I think is hilarious. Of all the games of Ubisoft, dude, like, put on your desk.
This one. That's pretty funny. Well, at least he's not the only one that likes it, right? You know, there's one good person in the world that likes it. Anyway.
But yeah. So going from a game that no one talks about to a game that people talk about probably a bit too much, but
have very mixed opinions on.
Have very mixed opinions. I would say the negativity is way too high on this game. It's DK64, which was amazing. I love DK64. It is Banjo 3E in my mind.
It's Banjo 3E, but with too many characters and too many different collectibles.
Oh, man. But as a kid, I loved that.
No, I mean, I remember playing it quite a bit, like when I went over to friends' houses and stuff. And then I actually got to play it myself in high school. And I did really like it. But after playing like Banjo and Banjo-Tooie, it was definitely like they took all of the ideas from Tooie and just went even farther in terms of collection.
Yeah, it is definitely a marathon for a collectathon. It is so much larger. It is. It took the genre to the absolute extreme.
Yeah, definitely. And I think some people even attribute it to the downfall of the collectathon genre in a lot of ways.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, we love the collectathon genre. We've talked about Banjo before on this podcast. And it's a very great genre. I think it's very fun to go around, do some really fun platforming, puzzle solving, and just collect a whole bunch of random crap. But like, I totally understand all the people that are like, there are too many things to collect in this game. And what I think makes it very difficult and very, or maybe not difficult, but what gives it such a negative opinion is how hard it is to switch between the different Kongs and remember where you have to go still with all of the different Kongs. Because you'll be walking through an area your first time and you're like, dang, there are blue and pink bananas here. Guess I got to come back as Lanky and Tiny. You know, like you have to remember those types of things. And it can be very tedious to remember all of that, especially since the game has what, like 8 worlds or something like that.
I think what they needed to do to fix the game is one, all the like really small bananas that are littered all over the worlds. Those should have been pick upable by like any Kong.
Yeah.
As well as like a whole bunch of different items like coins and stuff. I'm fine with the main objective, gold bananas, being like just specific Kong related or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
But all the like the small collectibles, they should have been a shared collectible. I've heard a lot of people say like, well, they should have just allowed you to switch on the fly when you move. And I feel like that kind of takes away some of the experience in a way. Because I do feel like you need, I don't know, it is a game that backtracks. A lot of people don't like backtracking. I do.
I mean, honestly, I do too. But we're both Metroidvania lovers, so it's like it comes with the job description.
Yeah. And like I hear people complain about it all the time. I'm like, yep, those are valid criticisms. I don't have like any argument to say they're wrong, but
but I'm still gonna love this game.
I still enjoy the process of it. I don't know. I feel like a compromise could have been if they had a health system similar to the Donkey Kong Country games, where like when you pick up a barrel, you get another Kong, and then you can switch among the Kongs that you have collected and the rest. And then when you take damage, you lose a Kong, right?
Yeah.
Maybe that would like lead to some softlock issues.
Probably. And also, I think from just a memory standpoint, I don't think the game could have handled having multiple Kongs on the screen at once.
Oh, yeah. Rare did weird things. Like, they would always, like, find the technical limitation of their games and then just, like, abuse it when, like, programming things. One of the big examples was they put in specific collectibles in Banjo-Kazooie with the idea that you would like hot swap
your cartridges
without turning off your console. And Nintendo had to come to them like late in development and say, you cannot like have this be a feature because you haven't tested this on every single model of N64 that has come out or will come out. And we do not want to test this feature, potentially bricking future N64s.
It's like, we love the idea and it makes sense to us now because consoles can have the save data for games on internal memory. So they could like read it later, you know, and do that kind of stuff. But yeah, hot swapping like that would just be.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
And so they also kind of did this with DK64. There is they specifically. How do you explain it? So like the world will be at a different frame rate than the character. At times they will speed up the frame rate, they will detect like slow down in frames and like in response to it increase frame rates in other areas of the game just so it feels like a static frame rate in a way. And even with this there's still some slowdowns, but there were some unintended consequences where I believe if you get there's a Gloomy Galleon banana in like the mechanized fish, where if you get to a certain point in the game, it just becomes absolutely brutal to get because if you like use the scope ability on your gun, it will just increase the frame rates. So it's like almost impossible to like hit the target.
That sounds about
stuff,
right.
Stuff like that. And like these weird like things that Rareware did make it just an absolute nightmare to like port the games or like emulate them even. Because yeah. They're like expecting very specific behavior from the hardware.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why emulation can be very hard for video games, because the hardware was designed in very specific ways and developers abused that knowledge.
Well, especially Rareware.
Yeah. So like honestly, I think that I might be making this up, but I swear I read years and years ago that like people are like, the gold standard for emulators is if they can handle DK64 or something like that. I don't know if that's true, but I swear I remember reading that.
So like they ported Banjo-Tooie to the Xbox 360 and that game always gets desynced all the time because it, I don't know. Like there's not a whole lot you can do about it. It's Rareware did a lot of things that were black magic at the time. And, has long lasting effects on the legacy of those games.
They were black magic then and they're just jank now.
Yeah.
But on the more positive note, DK64 is very fun. The characters are very charming and the world is really fun to explore. It's just is definitely tedious to collect everything in the game. And if you're going for, what is it, 106% completion, like good luck. Especially since you have to play through like the original Donkey Kong, right? In order to get some.
They chose like a really hard version of that game too. I don't know why. So like DK64, all the criticism people say about it is true.
Yeah.
I agree. It is true. But despite that criticism, I think the game is an absolute blast. It's one of my favorites from the N64 era. It's just not a game that I feel like you're supposed to marathon through like immediately, right? Like you will get tired out. So you should take it in like chunks.
Yeah, I agree with that. The sad thing is that DK64 isn't on NSO yet. And probably for good reason, because I think it took them forever to figure it out. Well, I mean, I think it took them forever to get it on the Wii U, right?
Like, yeah, and it was bad.
It was bad.
The Wii U port was bad. It didn't run right.
So I guess the only way to really play DK64 is to go get yourself an N64 and buy a cartridge.
Yeah, pretty much.
But good luck, because you also need the expansion pass, and not every N64 is going to have it. Or expansion pack, not pass.
Yeah, luckily there's just as many of those out there as there are DK64 games.
Right, because they had to give them out.
they were packaged with the game, yeah. Everyone owned DK64, I think, because you got the pack with it.
Pretty much. And the pack helped with multiple games because it did double the console's RAM.
Yeah, it was used for Majora's Mask.
Right.
I can't remember off the top of my head any other like games that required it. But yeah, you got the pack for DK64 and Majora's Mask.
And just to kind of solidify a little bit DK64 before we move on, Grant Kirkhope did write the music for it. So like you're getting some pretty solid soundtracks. You know, if you like the Banjo-Kazooie music, you will really like the music in DK64. It feels very respectful of the original Donkey Kong Country music, while also being very fun, upbeat, and rare for the N64 era anyway. So I think DK64 has some of the best Donkey Kong music in general.
Ooh.
I mean, just from a fun standpoint. I think Donkey Kong Country Returns and Tropical Freeze have awesome music in them too. But some of the songs from DK64 are just very good.
Yeah. As far as DK games go, I think my favorite has to go to Tropical Freeze for soundtrack.
I mean, I'd probably agree with you there. That game has phenomenal music.
They got David Weiss back for that one, right?
I think so.
Yeah. But yeah, no, DK64 has a phenomenal soundtrack. It's one of the main reasons why Grant Kirkhope has such a following.
Yeah. And you're right. They did get David Weiss back for Tropical Freeze. I just looked it up. Give Donkey Kong 64 a shot if it ever comes out to NSO. If they figure out how to do it.
I mean, the N64 on NSO in general has issues.
Yeah. They fixed a lot of them.
Throw DK64. It's like throwing a match on a gasoline pile.
I still can't believe how Ocarina of Time looked that first like month on NSO.
Oh man. Anyway. I just yeah. We already have an episode on that.
We do. Go listen to that. But anyway, moving away from Donkey Kong 64 and all of those technical parts, the final game we wanted to put on our list was Super Paper Mario. Super Paper Mario does have a pretty decent fan base, I think. But in the Paper Mario community, if you ignore the last couple of games that have come out in the series, Super Paper Mario is definitely like the weirdest out of the original three games. And that's because it took just a wildly different approach to the game. No longer was it a turn-based RPG, but it was much more of a platformer with individual levels that you would go through. But I honestly love the game, and I think it's one of the best stories Mario has ever told.
Yeah. So this is actually my favorite Paper Mario game. I know a lot of people are going to get angry with that statement.
I'm angry, Jordan. No, just kidding.
That's why it's on the underrated list. I remember the game came out and people did not like this game.
I remember too.
In fact, I remember when Sticker Star was revealed and people lost their minds at how good Sticker Star looked and how excited they were for Sticker Star, because it's returning back their roots and we no longer have the 2D crap of Super Paper Mario. And man, have the opinions changed on Sticker Star.
I mean, well, they have changed pretty quickly after the game came out, right?
Yeah. Sticker Star is so unliked in the community now that people quickly forgave Super Paper Mario. So like,
yeah,
Super Paper Mario, it's now considered, I would say, a net positive reputation. People now have come around and like actually like it, but it gets nowhere near the same recognition as the first two games.
And of course, the first two games have, you know, people that like one of the first two games generally enjoys the other. But there's also like a weird fissure in the fandom on which of those two is the best. And it makes me laugh because clearly Thousand Year Door is the better of the two. Just kidding. But this is about Super Paper Mario.
Yeah, the clearly better one.
The clearly best.
The clearly best.
But I'm with you. Like, I really enjoyed the game when it came out. I mean, I loved Thousand Year Door. Thousand Year Door was actually like the first console game that I owned myself. And so I have a lot of like love and attachment and memories directly with Thousand Year Door. But Super Paper Mario, like, even though I love Thousand Year Door, I still really enjoyed it because it still had great writing and characters. It still felt Paper Mario-y to me in that they almost took the paper aspect of it farther than Thousand Year Door did. And I don't know, the bite-sized levels were just also really interesting. I didn't have to play the game as long, you know, in super long bursts like I had to with the Thousand Year Door.
Yeah, all the levels had like a creative hook to them as well.
Yeah.
That made them feel pretty original. My favorite, I just really like the idea of the what's the one where you go to the mansion or whatever and then immediately have to like pay off a debt.
That was so good. Oh, that one was so good. You're just like, you're here now and then you're trapped until you pay off money. Oh, that was so good.
Yeah.
Well, and then one of the other like top moments in that game is when you have to do the dating simulator with Peach and the like lizard character. Oh, that was so good.
The game was ahead of its time, man.
It really was. It was so funny and so self-aware. I mean, honestly, the third wall break or fourth wall breaks and self-awareness of the game, I think, are what make it so memorable for me, because it was just like so funny and so well put together.
Yeah. I think it's the funniest game in the franchise, which is saying something because most of the games in the franchise are really funny. Even the latest one, I forgot its name.
The Origami King. Shows how much we liked that one.
I played it.
I did too.
I actually played that one on like Color Splash.
But yeah, no, it's a super funny game. And what I really appreciate about the game is that you also can play as Peach and Bowser and another character in green.
Yeah. Also, it gave us Mr. L.
I know. And Mr. L is so cool.
Yeah. Dementio is probably my favorite villain in all of Mario.
Same here. Honestly, he's so good.
The music is phenomenal. Like, yeah. Ultimate Show is one of my favorite songs in the Mario franchise.
And I still love Flipside and Flopside's themes. They are very good hub world songs, like Rogueport was in Thousand Year Door. And I also really enjoy like the story time song that plays at the very beginning of the game. Like, that's on one of my playlists and I hear it all the time. Love the music in that game.
Yeah. So, yeah, really good writing. Really good music.
And I think the game had some solid like platforming sections too. Yes, it was kind of awkward at times to switch between 2D and 3D mode. And like, you had to hold the Wii remote sideways, and then sometimes to solve puzzles, you had to like shift it to pointer mode. And that was kind of, I mean, it worked and was fairly good, but it also felt awkward at times. Like, oh, I didn't know I was supposed to actually switch to pointer mode here to solve this puzzle and stuff like that. But I think that the execution was really great. The hybridness between the 2D and 3D actually felt really well thought out as well. Being able to do that platforming and solve puzzles in both environments in the same area was actually really cool.
Yeah. The graphics were a choice.
Yeah, they were all right. Yeah. I didn't mind them.
That was definitely one of the things people complained about the most when it came out. Or as they said, like, it was clip art, the game.
Yeah, but it's paper.
It is also kind of weird that, so like, it's Paper Mario or whatever, right? But it's clearly set in a digital space.
Yeah, because you have the mouse pointer.
Yeah.
Everywhere. I don't know. It felt more like, you know, the first two Paper Marios, you were actually in a storybook, right? And in this Paper Mario, or I guess the first Paper Mario was like you were in a storybook. The second Paper Mario was more like you were on stage all the time. With like curtain calls and stuff like that. And then this game, it felt like you were actually inside a video game, which was really an interesting choice.
I mean, you go to the Game Over world, so.
Yeah, you do, which was pretty cool. Like kind of like a garbage collection world too, right?
Yeah.
And one of the worlds got erased. That was so cool. And also terrifying in some ways.
Yeah, there was some existential horror stuff in that game.
Definitely.
It was the last game that they allowed Paper Mario to be creative.
Definitely.
It might have been the reason why we stopped having Paper Mario be creative, because they might have gone a bit too far.
Probably, honestly.
Like, they went wild with their creativity in this game.
Yeah. And I mean, to be fair, it wasn't Sticker Star that got rid of companion or partner characters. It was actually Super Paper Mario. Super Paper Mario had the, what were they called? The pixels or pixies? I think they're pixels. That joined you, and you could play as the four different characters, but they got rid of your standard companions like we had in the first two games.
I think it's forgivable though, because like you said earlier, you got Peach and Bowser as playable characters, which means they were still characters in the cutscenes, right? You still
had characters.
And that's one of the main things people want with the companions back, is that you have like this active cast going along with you through the story.
Right. And not just the Bomb-Omb named Bomb-Omb that is gone after a while in Origami King. I won't say why, but he's gone. I don't know. It felt more like an adventure. The first three Paper Mario games did.
Yeah.
Like an actual story where Mario has his companions. And honestly, like a lot of people, I've heard a lot of people say this, but they're like, Paper Mario or Super Paper Mario is like the anime of the Mario series. Like, it just feels so much like an anime story compared to everything else. And I can kind of agree with that. At least for anime around that time in what, 2007? 2008, yeah, whenever it came out.
I think it was 2007. It came out in the launch year of the Wii. I believe it was originally supposed to be on the GameCube, and then they shifted course pretty late in development to the Wii. And so that's why there's some of like the really weird, like, jankiness to some of the gimmicky stuff with the Wii.
The pointer based stuff.
Yeah, all the pointer stuff definitely came from the Wii development side.
Yeah. But whatever, I still think it's a really solid video game, and I wish that more people would give it a real and fair chance instead of trying to just straight up compare it to its predecessors.
Yeah, everyone likes to talk about how good Thousand Year Door is and then are really dismissive of the games afterwards because they're just not Thousand Year Door.
Yeah, but some of the games deserve it, like Sticker Star. Yeah, I think it is definitely a bad game. Color Splash had a lot of really great moments in it. I will give it credit for that. I thought there were some really fun things there, but it just didn't quite hit right for me, even if you ignore the fact that it's Paper Mario and compare it to the other games. And then Origami King did a really good job trying to bring things back, but I think they leaned too far into the paper mechanics of the game and didn't give us the characters that we'd want. Yeah, from a
I think a good Origami King is missing good gameplay. And yeah. and the characters, because yeah, like, it's combat, the comedy's there.
Oh yeah,
the comedy is there. The comedy is really good. I just always think back to like the one part where they're doing the play or whatever, and they pan the camera out to like the crowd of toads, and you see that they're all just like tied to their chair.
Yeah, that one so actually funny.
Had me like burst out laughing.
That was so good. And I think the overworld is designed well enough, but the battle mechanics are just awful. Yeah. I hate battling in that game.
The battling was really bad. the battle mechanics are the reason why I stopped playing the game.
Same. Honestly, same.
I did not finish it.
I got to like the desert area and then I was like, I'm so tired of these puzzles.
Yeah. Yeah. It just was really repetitive.
But anyway, Super Paper Mario is great. It's very fun. And like you said, the Dementio is one of the best villains, and oh man, it was just so good. I want to replay the game now. I really do.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I don't think we'll ever see the series get to this level of creativity again.
No, definitely not. At least not until Miyamoto retires and somebody is given full blown control. Oh,
I don't even
think
it would be Miyamoto. I think Nintendo, the proper, just doesn't want like.
True.
This game was very, very loose with the Mario IP.
Yeah. And they've kind of started clamping down more on it. Though I will say today the final trailer for the Super Mario movie came out, and they're actually doing some really fun and interesting things. Even though the toads are still very generic looking, I feel like it might be a sign that the Mario franchise will be jumping back into creativity again, if only because they've been inspired by the folks at Illumination. There was like an interview as well within the direct, and I think some additional statements made afterwards, where Illumination actually had to create a whole lot of new technology and do very unique and interesting things with character design, with set design, and even some of their like physics and rendering engines in order to make the movie look as good as it does. And I was actually really impressed by that kind of boldness and statement before the movie even came out. So, you know, I've said before that I'm really hopeful that, you know, maybe we're going to get some sort of refresh to Mario because the movie has had so much focus on it. I don't necessarily want a huge design change for everything, but maybe it's a sign that they're moving more in the direction of more creativity with the series, and maybe Paper Mario will get another chance someday.
Yeah, I just had an awful thought, though. What if they have Chris Pratt voice Mario for all future games?
Please no. It's so funny. I've like tried to count how many times they have him speak in the trailers, and like every single trailer, I swear they're like avoiding Mario's voice on purpose.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I love how in our initial impressions video, we talked about how we actually liked that Chris Pratt, and I quote, was actually trying.
I mean, he kind of was, but.
Yeah, we kind of missed the mark on that one. I feel
we
like.
Did. We did. We did. But hey, at least the marketing department knows that they need to focus on Donkey Kong, Luigi, and Bowser.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. So we'll see with the Mario movie when that comes out. Maybe Dementio will show up and be the surprise villain.
I mean, they threw a Luma in. Did you see it?
Yeah.
You saw the trailer because the Luma was like there in the first part of the trailer. I was like, why do they put a Luma in here? Is Rosalina going to show up?
I imagine it's just going to tie the movie into a future sequel. They'll jump straight to Mario Galaxy. Mario 2.
That'd be incredible. Anyway, I hope the movie's good, but we were talking about Super Paper Mario, and I hope that one day this gets the same treatment that Mario Galaxy did on the Switch, where we can actually play it again on Switch. Because if they're going to get rid of motion controls on the next console, then there's no way we're ever going to be able to play it again. Well, we will, but they'd have to do something creative.
Yeah. I mean, they do have the emulator for Wii games. That's how Mario Galaxy runs.
Jordan, I just had a thought. What if they did a Mario collection with the first three Paper Marios, where they didn't even like really remaster them, but they up-res them like they did for the Mario bundle?
For $60?
Yeah. I'd buy it.
I'd buy it. A lot of people complain, though.
Oh, they'll definitely complain. And we talked about pricing last week. And I think this falls into the... A lot of people will buy it, but a lot of people will be very mad about it. I mean, in all honesty, I'd rather them recreate the games. I think that the team needs it. If Nintendo's going to let them have free reign on creativity again, they need to actually go into those games and see what made them so fun and good and lovable by at least the fandom. Anyway, who knows if that'll ever happen?
Honestly, I don't think Thousand Year Door or Super Paper Mario, I don't think they really need new HD textures. I think an HDification is just fine.
I agree.
I don't think new HD models would do much to those games.
No. They were designed to be pretty blocky in their set design anyway. And like all of the characters are basically just PNGs. So it works. I love Paper Mario. I know you do too. At least Super Paper Mario, because it's the best of the three, right?
Yeah. It's my favorite one.
It's very good. Thousand Year Door is still my favorite, but I still love Super Paper Mario. I'm one of those weird hybrid fans that actually like Super Paper Mario and the RPG ones. It's funny. A lot of people actually either prefer one or the other. You seem to be on the side of Super Paper Mario, and I know a lot of people that are on the side of the RPG games.
Yeah, I would say the RPG games is definitely a lot larger, though.
Definitely. Which is why Super Paper Mario made it to this list of underrated Nintendo games. Well, anyway, is there anything else we need to really say about Paper Mario here?
Nah, I think I'm good.
All right. To kind of wrap up, though, the episode, just this last little bit, we hope that these games, you know, Zelda 2, the Rhythm Heaven series, especially Rhythm Heaven Fever, Star Fox Assault, Red Steel 2, DK64, and Super Paper Mario, we hope that by talking about these games a little bit, that you guys have maybe thought about checking out some of these more underrated games, or maybe looking at some games that Nintendo's released or that have been released on Nintendo consoles that maybe haven't been reviewed as well, but might be something you're interested in. Like, we really do think that people's opinions are valid and very different in regards to some of these different games that are released. And we just wanted to shine a light on these games because they're some of our favorites, and we really enjoyed our time with them.
Yeah. And let us know what games you think are underrated than Nintendo's release.
Yeah, there are plenty of them. You know, we could have done an even longer episode about more games, but we're going to cut it at these six.
Yeah, maybe we'll do another one of these later on.
That might be a killer really episode. Fun idea. Yeah. Well, anyway, if you want to tell us about your underrated games, come join our Discord server. Or leave us a comment. You can find a link to our Discord server in the description of the episode. And of course, all the comments on the YouTube video are available for you there as well. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Nintendo Fusion podcast. And with all that said, we'll catch you on the next one. Bye-bye.
See ya.